Good evening. This is Mark Lynch, and this is Inquiry. My guests tonight are Nick Capasso, always a pleasure to talk to him, museum director at the Fitchburg Art Museum, and Frank Armstrong, photographer and educator. He has spent the last 21 years teaching at Clark University, and we're talking about the exhibition American Roadsides, Frank Armstrong's Photographic Legacy, on view until January 5th, 2022. And there's a companion show called Quirky, Beautiful, Ordinary, American Roadsides from the Fitchburg Art Museum Collection, on view till May 29th. Frank, Nick, welcome back to the show, Nick. And Frank, I am so glad to be able to talk to you for the first time.
Thank you. I'm glad. I'm happy to be here.
Now, I want to talk, Nick, a couple of things general about Fitchburg Art Museum. How are you guys doing at this moment? Have you finally, we're in the denouement of the COVID. Are you back on your feet, you feel?
Yeah, we're doing well. We still have a mask mandate in place.
Yep.
We're going to be reconsidering that over the next couple of weeks.
We have the same deal here. I can't do live guests yet, so.
Yeah. So, you know, we've been rolling with it for 2 years, and we're doing fine. And I have to say that, Frank's show opened a little over a week ago, and we have had terrific attendance.
Oh, yeah. It's a great show. How can you not love this show?
Well, that's how I feel.
Well, I want to talk about it's American Roadsides, Frank Armstrong's Photographic Legacy, which is on view to June 5th. How many pieces are in the show?
Well, let's see.
There are 41 of mine.
Wow. Now, the companion show is Quirky, Beautiful, and Ordinary?
Yes, that's a show from our permanent collection
with
a wide variety of photographers who offer some context for Frank and his photographic M.O. And then the other important part of American Roadsides and the other important part of Frank's photographic legacy is that many of his students over the years have gone on to find successful careers as fine art photographers. And we're including 7 of his former students in the show.
Russell Banks, Sarah Bellotta Belclaire, I think.
Belclaire, excuse me.
Rachel Loeschild, Greer Madoni.
Greer Muldowney.
Madoni, Jasper Muse, Eric Nichols, and Catherine Wilcox Titus.
That's right.
And so this is a huge photographic show.
It is. We've given over the greater part of the museum to Photographs of America.
Now, Frank, I have to talk to you. I'm going to talk to you a lot. This is recent work from you, relatively recent work from you, and it's all digital and it's all color.
Yes. I think the oldest piece in the show is 2012. But it's all recent work.
I love your story. I went to your website and read about it. And I want to mention there's a great film of you that was taken by Clark University students.
Yes.
That's on the Fitchburg Art Museum website. And people should definitely take a look at the film. But let's talk about you and growing up. You were born in East Texas. What town were you born in?
Well, they call it, most people would call it Henderson. But if you're from East Texas, it's called Henderson.
What was it like?
It's just a small East Texas town, agricultural mostly, a lot of churches.
Is it big sky country? Or is it hilly?
Oh no, it's piney woods.
No,
it's rolling hills but full of pine trees.
Did you have the impulse to photograph as a child?
No. I didn't know what a camera was.
Did you have any kind of artistic impulse?
Not that I recall. I mean, I played in sandboxes with wind-up caterpillars and stuff. I did.
Oh, cool. Well, so. Architecture. We'll call it architecture. You attribute joining the Navy as the beginning of the sort of getting the impulse to take a photograph. Through joining the Navy, it brought you to California and Alaska. Talk to me about those experiences, because those must have been special.
Well, the one thing I was trying to do was, I knew that if I stayed in East Texas at that age, 18, 19 years old, I guess it was, that you know, I'd wind up being a grocery store clerk the rest of my life or something like that. I mean, there was just like, seemed like no opportunity.
Yeah.
And so joining the Navy took me out of Texas and gave me a broader view. I mean, I went to California. Lord, a guy from East Texas going to California, that's like going to exotic world, you know?
Oh, yeah. So, where were you in California?
San Diego.
Mm-hmm.
And then going to Alaska, that was just one more exotic jump.
You know, in a completely different way.
In a completely different way, yes, yeah.
Where were you stationed in Alaska?
The first time was in Adak, which is out in the middle of the Aleutian Islands.
Oh, yeah. You're in the middle of nowhere.
Oh, but there's another place that's even further.
Attu?
Attu. And that's the last American island out there. The next one belongs to the Russians.
That's a really popular birdwatching spot, by the way, and I know.
Yeah, and when we were there, it was like just leftover mess from all the
that's right.
stuff that went on in Act Two. Yeah, I was there in the late 50s. So.
And there's a Quonset hut still there from that time period.
The old building that we were in, Navy, called Navy Town, is still there. I know that.
Yeah, yeah. That's a totally different experience. That's a big, open, lonely spot.
It is. And you know, that sort of experience in Alaska, the only way to let people know where you are and what you're doing was to make some pictures.
Yeah.
And if you exposed a roll of film and wanted to get it processed, you know, not doing your own, then you gave it to the PX people, and then they would mail it back to Seattle or ship it back to Seattle. It might be 6 weeks before you saw the pictures.
Wow. Now, what was it? Can you remember what your first camera was?
An Argus C3.
So what were you shooting for film? You were shooting 35 millimeter?
35 millimeter, black and white. I don't remember what it was. And some Kodachrome.
Nice.
So, but the old Argus C3, yeah, that was my first 35 camera.
Talk to me about when that thing clicked in for you, that you realized, this is what I want to do.
I think it was a very slow development. But what happened was, I was a radioman in the Navy,
mm-hmm.
and sitting in the radio shack at Attu, there were giant stacks of old photographic magazines, Poplar Photography, Modern Photography, U.S. Camera, and you don't have anything to do besides just sit there and listen all day long. And so I started reading these magazines, and that's where the seed got sort of started. Like, oh, this is pretty interesting stuff.
Yeah.
Because
yeah.
I love the mechanics of the camera. I mean, I that's what got me interested in it. And then started reading what you could do with it and looking at people's pictures. And I'm like, this is interesting stuff. And I think that's where the seed, you know, sort of started sprouting.
Now, what happened to you after Attu?
I came back to the U.S., worked for the post office for almost a year.
Now, at that point, are you still taking photographs?
Yes, yes, absolutely. Came home and built a little bitty darkroom in my parents' house, and started working for the post office for a year, and then started school again. Went to Kilgore College, which you may have heard of.
Yeah.
Talked those people into giving me a scholarship so I could take pictures for their yearbook and newspaper.
And would you consider that at that point your career is off and running?
Yes, yes, absolutely. Because when I transferred to UT Austin, I did some more work for UT in the journalism department as a lab supervisor. So
I'm not a photographer, but I did make my own darkroom and develop photographs for a couple of years, and I considered that whole process magical. Talk to me. Did you have the same reaction of developing when you were developing your own photographs, that this is something that is really special?
Yes. In fact, one of my great joys is when I was teaching and then taking students into the darkroom first time when they were making their first prints, to hear the collective, ah. But everybody was doing it, and they were going, oh, when that image started to come up in the tray. And you still get that feeling when you're, you know, processing a print. Yes, absolutely.
It's like nothing else. I don't know of any other art form that has that kind of feedback, which we don't have anymore because everything's digital.
Well, but, you know, I still sort of get that same feeling when I watch a print come out of the printer. Because you know, I see it on the monitor, and I'm like, okay, is it going to be exactly what I want it to be when it comes out?
Right.
Because even though you say, oh well, it's all perfect now, you just press a button and it happens. No, it doesn't. There's as much work in producing a digital print as there was in the darkroom.
Absolutely.
So.
So did you start off, what were you focusing on, landscape sort of portrait shots, or what kind of things were you doing?
Well, when I was working, after I finished at UT, I started working for the university. And most of that was just people pictures, what they were doing, you know, activities and so on and so forth. And I worked for 3.5 years for what's called student publications, where I supervised a gaggle of about 8 or 9 photographers that did all the work, and I just did some of it. And they were all doing things for the newspaper and the yearbook and the entertainment magazine and the engineering magazine, blah, 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 that we had. And then I got a job teaching half-time and working half-time for the news service of the university.
Wow.
And all my news service stuff was, you know, photographing old grumpy professors that didn't want to be photographed.
And therein lies a challenge.
Therein lies the challenge. And I have to say, I got good at it because I've developed little techniques to sort of catch them off guard or make them relax a little bit. And one of the things I would do whenever I went into their office, I never had a camera loaded with film.
Huh.
And I would take the camera out and start loading it, and that gave me a few minutes to talk and observe either their mannerisms of what their office looked like, blah, blah, blah. It sort of sized up the situation as I got ready for it.
Did they get to see the photograph before you passed it in?
They always saw it afterwards. My favorite line, you know, they always, you come into their office and they say, well, I never look good in photographs. And I
Right.
And I would say, my response to that was, well, you never been photographed by me. So, and that worked. I mean, that would, you know, lighten the moment and to get us started.
Well, that comes in really handy in doing sort of roadside stuff, because you're going to bump into people, and people, especially nowadays, are very suspicious of people with cameras, and you need to get people relaxed.
I do. You know, it was in the mid-70s when I was still working for the university that I began to seek out these pictures that I call it, they're about people, but they're without the people in them.
Yeah.
You're out there on the side of the road and people will stop and say, what are you doing? You know, because in those days I had a big camera with a black cloth over my head.
Yeah.
And people, they were more curious than anything else because they didn't think that was a way to photograph anymore.
So
they say, well, they would ask you, how old is that camera? And I said, well, I bought it about 6 years ago. Brand new. And they were always surprised by that.
Were you shooting at that time in the early days? Are you shooting mostly black and white?
Only black and white.
It's only interesting because I've seen your both black and white and color photography, and it's two completely different experiences. It's like apples and oranges for me as a viewer looking at that.
Well, you have to consider that, you know, when I got serious about making personal, what I call my personal photographs, everybody of that generation was influenced by the West Coast traditions.
Right.
Of Weston and Adams and and Gilpin in New Mexico and so on and so forth. And so those were the big people. And you wanted to emulate them, and you learned by what they were doing. And so, yes, you started out in landscape. And I was lucky enough at the same time to have friends and myself would go to Big Bend National Park, which is a wild, wild landscape in West Texas. And that's what we did. We trampled off through the desert and made pictures.
Does that still remain one of your favorite areas in the United States?
Oh, yeah, yeah. It will remain so. As it said in my book on Peace Star Road, I said, many times the photography was the excuse for going there. That's not why I went there, because I wanted to be in that landscape.
The book, there was a monograph called Rock, River, and Thorn, right?
Yes. Published in 2003, 2001.
Is it still available?
You can find it used on the web, yeah.
Okay. You're listening to WICN 90.5 FM. This is Inquiry. My name is Mark Lynch. My guest tonight, not in studio, returning, always a pleasure to talk to, Nick Apostle, Museum Director at the Fitchburg Art Museum, and Frank Armstrong, photographer and educator. He has spent the last 21 years teaching at Clark University. And we're talking about American Roadsides, Frank Armstrong's photographic legacy, on view to June 5th. Hey, Frank, yeah. I want to talk to you about this tradition of filming roadside, and I don't want to say roadside attractions, so that makes it seem cheesy. Your photographs capture an essence of a place, but sometimes there's sort of an interesting juxtaposition. There's always so much to look at in one of your photographs. How did that evolve for you?
I don't know. I've always been interested in a documentary approach, and I think that my attention to detail, which is one of the things that I like in pictures, these small things that mean everything. I have preached to students all my life, before Clark, when I was doing workshops and even when I taught at UT, I said, look, when you look through the frame of a camera, you're responsible for every relationship that is formed within that frame of the camera. So every object relates to every other object, and you're responsible for that relationship when you make the photograph. And I think that's where all that comes from.
That's a difficult thing to learn, too.
Yes.
That means that you really have to look and understand many things that are in your point of view at that time.
Yeah, well, that was the value of using the big old-fashioned camera with a dark cloth over your head.
Yeah.
You had to do all that looking and thinking before you set the camera up, because you can't just move that around and go click, click, click like you can with a 35. And you have to sort of preview in your mind what the picture is going to be.
And move around and look for the best angle and the best lighting.
Do all that before you set the camera on the tripod.
Now, I have this vision of you, and I know it's not correct, that you're just traveling around the United States looking for odd things to photograph.
Like, that's pretty true.
I just have this picture like, okay, I haven't driven through Wyoming lately, so I'll just take a couple of back roads.
That's probably it. I tell everybody, they say, well, how do you work? I say, well, it's kind of like you leave the house and you come to the first big intersection and you turn right. You come to the next big intersection, you turn left, and you do that all day long. You right, left. And wherever you wind up, it doesn't matter, because there's good stuff out there on every back road across the country.
I think your photographs also show a really love of the people and the place together, because that's what your photographs are about. It's not just landscape. It's humans in a landscape and what they do with it.
Well, yes, that's exactly what it is. I call them social landscapes.
Yeah.
Social meaning man, you know, and what they do, what they leave, the mark, the signs and the symbols that you find of what the people have done to the landscape, and how they live in it. Yeah, that's what the pictures are about.
It must have taken you a while, though, to develop your visual sensibility.
I don't know whether it did or not, because when I grabbed hold, that first time I grabbed hold of a view camera, with a dark cloth, the world became alive for me.
Huh.
And I could see these things that I wanted to photograph and have a way to present that for someone else to see. That was a short training period for me, that it just came natural. When I picked up the camera, that particular camera, and started making those photographs, I'm like, wow, where has this been all my life?
That's incredible. Does that make you believe that there are people who are naturally able to take photographs that have that eye?
Yeah. I think you're your right brain or your left brain, or the other.
Yep.
And I think it comes natural to a lot of people. I mean, you can be trained, and I see people who are trained, and it's like the old Ansel Adams saying that the worst thing is a sharp photograph of a fuzzy concept.
Oh, Ansel.
Yeah, oh, Ansel. That's right.
Oh, Ansel. Hey, I got to tell you something. You talked about pink flamingos, how they show up all the way across the country.
Yep.
I designed pink flamingos in my youth.
You really did? You really?
Oh my God. Daypole Plastics, which was used to be here in Worcester. I was in college. I needed a job, and I was one of the designers, and I had one of my jobs. And then I literally had to walk off the job. Was to come up with some new flamingo designs. And I don't put that on my resume, but I did do that. So I always feel guilty when people mention pink flamingos.
Well, somebody a couple of years ago, since I know I've been photographing flamingos wherever I find them. I mean, there are always things that you grab hold of that you wonder, what is this all about? And pink flamingos was one of the things when I moved to the Worcester area that I got sort of like, you know, this is sort of kitschy. I got to photograph this because it's just weird because the way people use them. Somebody gave me one about 3 years ago that didn't have any legs on it, and it's laying right over there looking at me.
Well, now everybody's trying to be hip about the pink flamingos. Now there's skeleton pink flamingos, and they come in different colors. But I love the people who are just putting the pink flamingos out there because they love them.
Yeah, exactly. And you, like I say, you find them everywhere. I found them in Alaska.
No.
Yeah, oh yeah. Several places.
That you really have to wonder, like, what were people... Do you ever get in conversations with people who live in these places?
Not really. I've got up in Princeton one day. I was photographing someone in somebody's front yard, and he came out, and I said, why do you do this? He said, oh, I just like them. That was his only comment. Oh, I just like them. So they don't have any reason for them.
Now, I always have you, you know, driving around in the West. Do you drive around here in New England too and do the same thing?
Oh, absolutely. Absolutely. I've covered most of Massachusetts back roads already.
Yeah.
I mean, of course, I've been living here since 92. So yeah, I've had a lot of time to run around here, and I've spent a lot of time in Vermont, New Hampshire, and Maine.
But as you write in your notes on your website, you don't really like cities that have a lot of people in them.
No.
There's something interesting about where people are in the big open space and then how they deal with that and then create stuff to go with it.
Well, it's the cities. I mean, the thing that bothers me most about cities, I'm a good old boy from Texas. And
you still have sort of the accent too, Frank. How did you manage to hold on to that? It's cultivated. Tell me. I bet that is.
No, it's tequila.
What's your favorite brand?
Centenario.
Nice. Keep going. Keep going.
I like the Reposado, the Centenario Reposado.
Oh, wow. Wow.
It's not a high-priced tequila.
Yeah.
And a lot of the stuff, the big ones, they've so mellowed them out that they've lost their character.
Oh, yeah.
And I want something with character. And I'm looking, I can stand a little roughness on the edge if it has character.
So you don't like these designer tequilas?
No.
Yeah. Yeah. Okay. I'm with you there.
Although, the famous speed actor, what's his name?
Keanu Reeves?
No. No, I'm not talking about the, what's his name?
Well,
the big, strong, hulky guy.
Arnold Schwarzenegger?
No.
Another big, strong, hulky guy. You're a big, strong, hulky guy.
Dwayne Johnson.
Yeah. Yeah, he's got a tequila.
His Reposado's not bad.
Really?
Yeah. I've bought several bottles of that now. So,
oh, that's good to know. Dwayne Johnson, The Rock. You heard it here.
Yeah, The Rock.
Frank Armstrong recommends The Rock's tequila. This is a first. I've never had this kind of recommendation on my show. I think it's excellent.
If this goes on the air, he needs to send me a case.
I know. That's what I was trying to do. It is going to go on the air, and he should send you a case. So we'll make sure that he – and this gets broadcast around the world, so wouldn't that be great?
It'd be wonderful.
That's right.
Maybe he'll come see the show then.
Hey, I got to ask you, as a person who photographed, you know, analog, was there any kind of apprehension when the digital revolution came on, or did you just naturally went, yay, now it's easier?
Well, because what had happened, in the late 90s, I was beginning to shift more into color.
Yeah. Oh, yeah.
And I was doing my own color processing.
Whoa.
Color printing in my own darkroom here at the house.
Can you just take a moment out and explain to people who are listening how difficult? I have total respect for people who can do their own color processing.
It is incredibly difficult because the temperatures you have to maintain, which are 100 degrees, and you have to, everything has to be just so precise. And what you do one day with the exact same materials and chemistry the next day won't come out the same because the chemistry is so unstable, it changes over time.
Oh, yeah. Oh, my God.
And it's that sort of thing. And you're like pulling your hair out constantly. So when Photoshop came along and I could work that way, I'm like, oh, yes, give me that. Because that I can hold on to.
But you don't have the same kind of setup now, do you, with digital? You don't have the cloth that goes over your head, do you?
No, no. I work with a big, fancy digital camera.
Yeah, and that's what I figured.
With a big, powerful computer and, you know, a god-awful expensive monitor.
Plus the fact you can take so many more shots.
Yeah, but I don't, really.
Really?
When I was shooting analog, every film holder, you know, each side has a sheet of film in it. I always expose two sheets of film on everything I shot.
Right.
Because I'm just clumsy enough at times I can mess up one of those when I'm processing it.
Yeah.
So I don't process them at the same time. I process one side of the holder and then process the other side later. And, you know, just repetition is such a good safeguard for what you're doing because you have so much expense while you're out there photographing. In other words, when you're taking these long trips, you use an enormous amount of your resource as just day-to-day living out there.
Yeah, yeah, yeah.
And you just can't go back there because if you go back, even if you go back the next day, it's probably changed.
Well, the lighting's going to have changed. Everything's going to have changed.
Yeah, exactly. And so you got to get it while you have the chance. And you just can't afford to do it otherwise. You have safeguards. And so, like, when I shoot digital, I come in at the end of every day, I download those files to three separate hard drives.
Wow.
While I'm on the road.
Wow.
So, you know, it's just redundancy. And make sure that no matter what, I have those images.
Well, we're completely out of time. I want to mention, Nick, Museum Director of Fitchburg Art Museum. The show is American Roadsides, Frank Armstrong's Photographic Legacies, which is on view till June 5th, 2022. Nick, are there any special programs?
There's Frank will be doing an artist talk on Friday, April 1st at 2 in the afternoon at the museum.
I think people have to come and see that. And especially if you bring tequila.
Oh, Nick, do you want to mention the public opening?
Yeah, if COVID continues to behave itself, we're going to have a public opening for the exhibition. Yeah. You know, not an opening, but a celebratory reception.
Yeah.
On the afternoon of Saturday, March 26th. So watch the Fitchburg Art Museum website when we confirm this.
Yeah.
Frank, it's been a real pleasure. I'm so glad we finally got a chance to talk.
Well, Mark, I've heard so much about you.
I've heard so much about you, so it's a sort of a mutual.
It's an honor. Thank you.
Well, the great thing is you got to see Frank. Frank looks the part. He looks like a grand old photographer. He's fantastic.
you forgot you forgot to say grumpy.
Yeah, but that goes with the show.
Yeah.
Frank Armstrong, Nick Capasso, thank you both so much for your time. You're listening to WICN 90.5 FM. This is Inquiry. My name is Mark Lynch. Good night.